Christine. My name's Penny, I'm an addict. Thanks for asking me to share, Dean, and thanks for your share, Dave. It was really, really grounding to hear, because when I first got here, and I haven't felt like this for many years, I felt quite nervous and anxious, and I know what it is. It's because I feel vulnerable. And when I feel vulnerable, I don't feel safe. All those old messages from my childhood start shouting at me, don't talk to people, stay safe, stay away, you feel vulnerable, it's not a safe feeling. But thank God I've worked, we're talking about steps, I come to NA and I've managed to work some sort of program and I'm able to challenge that stuff. And the reason I feel vulnerable is my brother passed away 8 weeks ago, and I now live in Bristol, but coming back to London, we buried him 3-4 weeks ago, and coming back today, it just hit me. So I am in feelings and I do feel vulnerable, but you know what? It's okay. It's not going to kill me, and I'm here and I'm doing service. So yeah, you might have to bear with me a little bit, because yeah. Anyway, so thinking about actually feeling vulnerable in childhoods, I didn't just become an addict overnight. I grew up in a family riddled with addiction and mental health, and I grew up feeling unsafe a lot of the time, and I learned to put on faces like these masks and act like I didn't care. So I appeared to the outside world, and I fooled myself into believing that I was quite cold and detached and things didn't bother me. And that wasn't the real me. That isn't the real me. I'm not like that. I'm quite a really soft person. Assertive and strong and stuff, but I am soft, I have feelings, but yeah. But back then, I wouldn't have been able to be like that. I wouldn't have. It served its purpose, and it no longer does. Growing up in that childhood, actually, was really confusing, because I grew up with, my dad was an addict, and but I grew up with a Catholic mum, so I went to convent schools, and there was, like, it was conflict, there was chaos, there was this harsh higher power. It was really difficult for me when I come here with higher power stuff. I was brought up with this really, like, crazy off-key dad where we never knew what was happening, hostels, children's home, madness. And then there was this strict, rigid way of being and believing and all these values and stuff. It was really conflicting and really confusing. Bloody no wonder I ended up the way I did. So I just mentioned my dad, and you'd think I'd have known better, seeing what he'd done and seeing what he put my mum through and my family through. And I've got this amazing mother, she's absolutely amazing. But still, you know, that me, that little voice that was telling me earlier, don't get vulnerable, don't go, don't talk to people, was there, and it was strong in childhood when I was really young. And it was like, you won't become an addict. You're not like the others, that won't happen to you. So I picked up, I was really young when I picked up, and I started, all the normal stuff that I hear lots of people share about, like puff and sniff and pills, nicking my dad's stuff as well. It happened quite quickly for me, the chaos. Well, it was already a chaotic childhood, but the chaos that I then went on to create. And I can remember my dad died, DOD'd, I think I was 15, and he died. So it's like, Penny, you should know better. Like, stop now. But did I? No, that was it. I decided to go and pick up heroin then. And I thought I was okay for years. I didn't think I was like him. I didn't. And I didn't think that I hurt anyone. I went out shoplifting. I got nicked. I went to prison. It was a bit of a respite, but no one was hurt. It was fine. Of course, I ruined that woman. I watched the woman age in front of me. And but still, to me, the denial was deep. I didn't hurt anyone. But you know what? Like, that was getting chipped away at, because all those years of using and kidding myself that it was okay, it was I couldn't maintain it. I started losing my soul. I was talking about my soul. I wasn't connected to it as a kid. I had to disconnect. But that soul was dying. She was dying. I lost my ability to go out shoplifting. I lost my bottle. It all went. I just lost everything. My mum means a lot to me, and my nephews. Me and my mum had some of my nephews, and they mean the world to me. And yeah, in that denial, I thought that they weren't touched. But you know what? With the progression, the nephews didn't matter, my mum didn't matter. I just, you know, I turned everyone's house into a crack house. I was out picking up butts. It was horrible. It was rock bottom. But you know what? It didn't stop me. It didn't. And it's crazy, right? So I thought, someone offered me to serve up one time, and I thought, oh yeah, this is good. I don't have to go out earning, so I can get drugs, and I'm not going to have to put myself at risk. Of course, doesn't work like that for me. I ended up smoking all the drugs, getting into trouble, and I did get nicked. And thank God that I look back, and that was meant to happen, because at that time in my life, I was soulless. I was just going on, and but you know what? In that, I felt shit. I felt guilty about my mum and my nephews who I loved, and I couldn't stop. I didn't understand this addiction thing. I never heard of the words addiction and powerlessness. So thank God that did happen. And I went away, and something happened in that last sentence. It's really weird. First of all, I'd done my normal thing of like running around and like in the chaos, what I knew, which was comfortable. But one night, I can just remember looking at a picture of my little nephews, and I broke. I started crying. I hadn't cried. I don't know when I'd cried before that. Not when my dad died. I just didn't cry. And I looked at the little photo of the boys, and I just thought, what the hell's happened? I didn't want this. I don't know what I did want, because I wasn't one of those kids that thought, oh, I've got an aspiration to become a bloody banker or anything like that. Or I didn't have any of that. All I did have as a kid is I used to look up at planes in the sky and think, one day I'm going to go on one of those. So I was in that cell and I just thought, I don't want this. I can't keep doing this. My mum, the boys, me. And if I keep going on, there's a little flame. There's something in here. It's going out. It's going to go out. And I went and asked for help. You know what I say in my childhood? I was grew up in chaos, and we was taught, there was messages, you don't talk to outsiders, you don't talk to do-gooders, social workers, counsellors, any of those people, they put you in children's homes. But do you know what? Something in me was, there was that little voice, you know, that my soul, it was talking to me, and it was like, Penny, go and ask for help, go and ask for help. And there was a guy in there, and there was this place where you go and work, and it had the 12 steps and 12 traditions up there, and I didn't get any of that, and it said God, and I was like, fucking weirdo, stay away from him. But I did ask him, and he sort of told me about it, and I thought, yeah, weird, really weird. But there was this person that started working in this prison, and I could tell he was an addict. So I opened up to him, and after that night when I broke down in tears, I went and said, Pete, do you know what? I want to do something different. I don't know what that is, but I don't want this anymore. I know I can't do it anymore. And he told me about NA, and he gave me a where to find. And at the end of that sentence, I can remember just... before release, it was on me. I thought I was getting on top of it, dealing with it in there, changing. It was on me, and it was powerful. And I didn't have a program, so I didn't have any power. I didn't have, yeah, it was horrible. I went home, and I scored, man. And do you know what? When I got to my mum's, and I see my nephews, and I see my mum, I felt... God, I felt awful. And I can remember going into the bathroom, doing my old bollocks. My mum's so clued up. And I was doing all my own old stuff, putting taps on, trying to hide the noise, sitting there, having a pipe and crying again. Just crying. And I could see, it was really bizarre. And this is, for me, was powerlessness. I could see where I was going again. It was like a tunnel vision in front of me, like a film being played out of all the horrible stuff that happened. And it wasn't those physical consequences that stopped me using it. It wasn't my rock bottom. It was those feelings that come with it. I just thought, oh my God, I don't want to go back there. I don't want that. I don't want to do this to my mum. I don't want to do it to the boys. I can't do this. And I went and asked for help again. And I was changing. This was not me. And I did go to probation. And for me back then, these were the enemy. And if you tell them you're going to be recalled and you go back, Penny, but I was ignoring that side. That diseased thinking, I was ignoring it, and I was just, I don't know, you know, when they say your journey, I was on a journey, man. I just went with the flow, and the first time in my life, I went with it, and I asked for help, and they offered me a rehab, and I was like, well, I just said I need to get out, my mum's all using it, I don't want to go to bloody rehab, just help me get a little, I was on a tag as well, I was just like, I just want to go somewhere else, I just want to get me a little bed sit somewhere, they were like, no, Penny, it's rehab or nothing, and I was like, do you know what, I'll just go, and when I got there, I can remember leaving my mum and one of my little nephews, Pookie, who I love, my little Pookie, took me to Paddington. I don't know what happened, I'd cried three times in a year. when the train was pulling away from Paddington, I started crying because I knew that I wasn't coming back to London, and I knew that I wasn't going to be with Pookie and my mum. I knew that it was changing, and I knew that it had to. And so it was like a little bit of an ending and a beginning to the new journey. And that's, I think, where recovery started for me. I got to this place, and there were words, God, everywhere. And I was like, oh no, what have I come to? What have I agreed to do? But I was desperate. I had that gift of desperation. I was desperate. And there was a couple of girls in prison, and there was people from my area. My area was funding, Tower Ambulance was funding everyone on these DTTOs to go to this rehab. And I was like, oh my, I wanted to run away from it. I was trying to run away. I wanted to get away from it. And then here I was. It was here. And there was two choices when I got there. It was either carry on with all my old mates and carry on the way I was, or step away from it and choose recovery. And one of the counsellors said that to me in there, and I was like, well, there's no choice. I haven't got a choice anymore. I've got to go with this. And at that time, they used to call me the ice queen, didn't do feelings. And I wasn't ready to back then. I really wasn't. It just, yeah. And but NA come in, and it was H&I, and there was this girl, and she was talking about her story, and I thought, wow. And she simplified the NA to me, and because it was a bit scary of all the God stuff, like these words, that's what stood out to me. It wasn't the other stuff, it was all the word God. But she simplified it, and I thought, wow, if she can do it, I can do it. And what she did say is, you know, go to meetings, get girls' numbers. Like, for me as a woman, and I'd struggled with men, I didn't like men back then, I was really scared. And she was like, just go and get women's numbers, reach out, get a sponsor, do meetings, do it, do service. And I took on suggestions. I didn't return to London. I went to this place in Bristol, and as soon as I got there, I put my bags down and I went to a meeting, and that's what I'd done. And when I was in that treatment facility, I was going to meetings, and I got a post, and I asked women for their numbers, and I can remember being so scared, I was terrified. And when I cleaned up, I developed anxiety. It was awful. I started having panic attacks. It was horrendous. I've been like thinking about even getting up in the morning, sometimes not being able to breathe, being so scared. And I've worked on that stuff, thank God. But you know, in early recovery, it was really difficult, but it was amazing at the same time. I had this freedom, because the obsession to use just went. It just went. I just kept going to meetings, and I got these women's phone numbers, and I asked this woman to sponsor me, and it was the best thing that I'd done. It was, she's still my friend today. She's an amazing woman. And what I learned is, I didn't have any vocabulary, man. I grew up in a crazy family in a crazy area, and all I knew was drugs. And so for me, it was a very slow process. It has been really slow, and it was just going to meetings and doing service and doing step work. And when I started doing step work, it started opening my eyes up, and I started learning about a higher power then, and I started learning that it doesn't have to be this mystic, mythical, spirit or anything like that. It was the rooms, it was people, and having faith and trust and hope that if I do this stuff like these other people here, I'll be okay. So I just done that, and I really got involved in the middle of NA, because I had no options. My family aren't able to support me, so I couldn't go back home, because I couldn't go to a house where they were using. It was really difficult. And the one person that was really supportive in my childhood was my aunt, and she'd been diagnosed with cancer, and sometimes I'd go and live with her, and this woman's amazing, this nurse. And so what I used to do is, when I did come to London, I'd go and stay with my aunt, and I'm so glad I did. And I'd go there, and it was really difficult at times, she'd be ill, but I'd keep going there, and I'd come and I'd meet up with my mum, and I kept myself safe. I listened to all these suggestions, and I didn't listen to anyone. My whole life got in so much trouble, but I started listening. And so I was doing the service, I was working on myself, working on my relationship with myself and with others. And with my mum, you know, you were talking about your mum, it really touched me, because for me, that's recovery. It's building those relationships with people and making an amends and being of some service to the world, not just to NA, to the whole world and family. And I really, really, worked on that stuff. And then I started to learn words and I started to get educated, and I didn't finish school or anything like that, but I started getting educated and I wanted to do voluntary work and stuff like that. And through NA, I started learning how to talk, and I learned about responsibility from doing service. I'd go to my jobs and I'd show up and I'd do what I was supposed to do. And, you know, slowly but surely, material stuff started coming. I was, you know, you hear about all that good outside stuff. It was coming, but I had to work on the inside stuff because I was so anxious. It was really difficult, and I felt so unsafe in the world, so I had to do that. So, you know, these sponsors were amazing for me, and the step work. And as I was saying, you know, learning about higher power, it was this, and it really did keep me going for many years, but I still struggled a little bit with it all. I did. It's always been some sort of like internal struggle with some parts of it. And I met a man in recovery, and I always said, right, when I was going to the meeting, I don't want someone, I don't want to be in a relationship, I just want to be on my own and maybe get a dog, and they're safe, they will love me unconditionally. But it was just like, but I did, and he was my friend for many years. He's in recovery, and we celebrated our 14-year anniversary this week, actually. And we've been married for two. Who would have known that? Me, that said, I want to get married, don't want kids, don't want anything to do with anything like that. I've been got married in my old treatment centre, of all places. It was a beautiful, it was an amazing day. But, you know, so I met him, so I had to learn then how to be in a relationship with someone else and keep my recovery going, not getting lost. And I've done that. I see the steps as sort of like a road map. So for me, I can be on the map, but I veer off it. I do. Yeah. I just veer off every now and again. I go off and I skip somewhere. It could be shopping. It could be anything. But then I come back. I hit pain. It tends to be pain. And then I come back. But and I also see these steps. They're tools. They help me with life. And they have done. I've got, you know, you were talking about going to conventions and stuff like that. I've travelled all over the world. You know, that aeroplane that I said, that's the only thing I ever wanted. I got into recovery. I didn't have a birth certificate. I had nothing. I had a fiver and a prison bag with some bits and pieces, and that was it. And a couple of fags. My mum had got me 10 fags. That was it. And yeah, I ended up getting that passport, the birth certificate, the passport. I had this goal of, I'm going to travel the world. And I had this goal of a certain type of job. And I'd done that. And I lost it. And do you know what, at the time, you know, that learning about powerlessness, like, and trusting and having faith that it'll be okay. I didn't want to lose that job, but it was the best thing that ever happened to me, because my experience has been, when doors have been closed, I try and control and push it. I become knackered, burnt out, angry and resentful. And sometimes my higher power gets involved, just shuts the door, and it's just like, I go with the flow, other doors open up, and it's always been okay. And it doesn't mean that it's always been nice and fluffy, because it hasn't, you know. So I've been all over the world. I've got these amazing friends. I've got a husband. I've got the most amazing relationship with my mum and with my nephews. And as a result of doing this, it's rippled out to my nephews. So my nephews they can talk about feelings. They've got children there. They've got jobs. They've got their own little families. And they can talk to me about stuff. They don't need to do what I did when I was a kid. And Jermaine, when he was little... it was early recovery for me. He was getting into a lot of trouble, and he did get nicked, and he went to prison. It was horrible. And then he had that moment himself. He decided that he wanted to like have a life. And he went for this little job interview, and he got a job. And he phoned me afterwards, and he went, Penny, when they said to me, so why? What makes you think that you can change something like that? And he went, well, my aunt was in and out of prison for years, and she was a heroin addict, and she changed, so she can, I can. And it done me. It was just like, wow, that made everything, all those struggles that I've, and I've been a lot in recovery, it just made it worth it. In that moment, it just made it worth it. And he's an amazing young man there, he is. I'm so proud of all my nephews. I love those boys so much, and that's what I mean. Recovery, you know, the disease of addiction doesn't just affect us, does it? And neither does recovery, it doesn't. But having said that, I've had to learn that I'm powerless over my family, I'm powerless over other addicts, I'm powerless over a lot of things. And talking about all that inside stuff's lovely, but you know, that life stuff's hard. So Bernie, my aunt, who I loved, she got ill with the cancer, and she died, and that was really difficult, because it was like being there for her and trying to like show up and be consistent and being that aunt and take it and niece and being there for my mum and being there for others. You know, even learning the steps, getting out of the way. It wasn't all about me, it was about others. And that was really difficult. But, you know, I love that woman so much. That's why it hurt so much. And I'm not good at letting people in and asking for help. I'm still not. But I've got a couple of people that I can do that with, and they helped me through that. And through doing the steps, it opens me up, it softens me, and I become a bit more open-minded to getting outside help. And that's been okay, that's helped. But there's been a lot of losses, and there's been a lot of health stuff. And my husband got diagnosed with a muscle wasting disease a couple of years ago, and that's been really difficult. But it wasn't like feel sorry for myself and throw it all in. It's like, we're in this together, we work through it, we've got a program, we've both got a program, we both do this stuff, we'll get through it, and it will be okay. And it's that, you know, trying to let go of control and reach out to people that can help me and love me through this stuff, and do the same for him. And my brother and my other aunt, they become ill this last year, and my brother comes to this meeting. It's the last meeting he ever come to. It was this one, actually, years ago. And he used to love the London Convention, but he couldn't stop. He couldn't stop. He was powerless. It's, you know, that it does me right, because this disease is so powerful, and it's cunning and baffling. It gets you in all sorts of ways, but it's that, it is so powerful. And you know, my brother's intelligent, really beautiful, gentle, kind soul, but he couldn't stop. And as a result, he actually he died clean and sober through no choice of his own, though. He had COPD and he got pneumonia. And you know, it was heartbreaking. I'd go to that hospital, I'd finish work, and I'd go to that hospital, I'd drive from London. I was there for my mum, got out of the way, and there for him. And I'd see all the kids that I grew up with there. It was like a war zone there, man. No legs in the respiratory ward where Wayne was. It was heartbreaking. I was just seeing all the... I see my using there and addiction is like we were through a war zone together, and some people didn't make it out, and some people, thank God for the program I know, have. And it's so precious. But, you know, seeing... I'd just done a step two. I've done these steps, and they've kept me going for all of this life stuff. I've really gone about the steps, because they are the backbone of recovery. And I'd just done a step two. And when Wayne was dying that night, I knew. I'm not religious. I'm not, and that's for me. And it's okay if people are. I really don't give a toss what people believe in, as long as they stay clean and they're kind to themselves and others. I really don't care. But it was a really strong spiritual experience. When I knew he was going to go that day. I just knew, and I come down here, and when he was actually passing, my mum panicked, and he did. And I was able to, you know, that's the most, like, when you've ever, I don't know if anyone's been through it, but it's, you're letting go of your life. It's proper letting go of control, just letting go, and trying to allow someone to do it, and make them comfortable, and put my own fear aside, and my selfish, like, wants to keep him alive. And to be able to comfort my mum in that was so, like, I'm so grateful, even though it was really heartbreaking, still is Wayne's death, but I'm so grateful that I'd done that step two and I'd found a new connection with a higher power. And for me, I'm not even, I don't analyse it anymore, I don't, but it was really spiritual and it was really powerful. And Wayne's still hanging around, his vibes, I still feel Wayne. But you know that, having the tools of this programme, I wouldn't have got through it without that. And I don't think, I've had a lot of bumps along the way, and I wouldn't have got through it without the steps, without my sponsor's great, without my friends, without the meetings, without doing service, I wouldn't have. But do you know what? That's not to say that it's been given to me by NA. I've had to put the work in. And one thing I realised with the higher power and the steps and stuff, it's, I've always really liked someone to take responsibility for everything and do everything for me. But it's like, I have to take responsibility and I have to do the work. No one else. I have to do this stuff. And you know, that's really, that really, with my brother, it's really, really hard. But at the same time, I'd booked a holiday to take my little nephew Poogie, and he's got little problems, and I nearly cancelled it. And I thought, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take Michael away. And yet, we had a great time, and we had fun. And to be able to do it for my nephews, I just love that I can do that. That I'm in a position that, even though I'm grieving and whatever, I've got a job, I don't use drugs, I can save up, I can take my nephew on holiday. It's bloody amazing, it is. And it isn't all struggles, it's not, that's life stuff, isn't it? It's like, rather, another thing, higher power, I wanted something to keep me safe. I was like, yeah, I'd done this stuff in Sunday school and in church and stuff. None of it kept me safe. Actually, this stuff hurt me. So it's just like, I want something that's got to keep me safe and I don't believe it can. But now something shifted with Wayne's death and doing this step two. Something really shifted where I do actually think, actually, it's something that's got my back. It's got my back. I don't know what it bloody is, but it's got my back. And it's taken me years to get to this point. It really has. I'm a slow learner. And addiction's not far away from me. It's not. I just have to look at my family, my friends. It's constantly there. It's a reminder. And I'm still scared of it. To this day, I still fear the picking up. I still fear the consequences of it. It still feels raw. I don't want to go back there. Don't want to go back there. I don't think I probably would never make it through that. I don't want. I'm a different person as well. I've softened over time. So I said, I've got this husband and I actually talk and I actually, I have to communicate with him and I have to negotiate. I have to, I have to compromise. And I have to do all this stuff and I've got that through. I go and I have to talk to my sponsor still. I like to. But do you know what? I've learned to trust myself as well with stuff. But you know, it's not constant, is it? Recovery's not constant. It's up, down. It's like a bit of a roller coaster all around the place. And who knows what tomorrow holds. But I know so as long as I keep coming here, I will be okay with it. You know, just a few things about all the reaping rewards of recovery. I was in school, I thought I was really thick. And my dad used to was so cruel about my intelligence. It turned out later on that I was dyslexic. And who would have known that I was dyslexic? And then with a few little bits of help, I ended up, it's maybe that was a bit of a driver, but I ended up getting this amazing career and doing amazing stuff and still felt shit inside and thick, and those messages were still strong. And that's why I went and done all the outside and stuff, and that's really important to me. But through my job, I'm so blessed. They paid for me to go to university to do a degree. And first of all, I was like, I can't do that. Voice was, you're thick, you cannot do this, you can't write, you can blag, you can talk, you can do plans, you can do all that stuff, but you can't do university. And then I just thought, you know what, I'm not listening, I'm going to do whatever. I've always done in recovery, I've faced my fears, and I've just gone for it with the help of some good friends, and I went for it, and I'm still in it. But do you know what, I'm actually enjoying it. I like learning. Who would have known that I'd have actually liked sitting down learning and writing some stuff? And it is bloody amazing, isn't it? You know, I was listening to you, Dave, and I was just thinking, you know, recovery. In the early days, I didn't have any evidence. I do like a bit of evidence still, but I didn't have any evidence, and I was so scared, but I just had that blind faith. I just went with the flow, and I still do that to a certain extent, but I do have a little bit of, I look back over my shoulder, and I just think, yeah, that was shit, but that happened, and yeah, that's been shit, but you know what, you're okay. I do have that, And you know why I do keep coming here as well? It's not that I just don't want to use it. I can go pretty insane if I don't use, talking about insanity. I can get really depressed and I can get really anxious when I'm not doing this stuff. It doesn't stop everything. It's nothing like it's going to stop everything. But I learn how to manage and I learn how to feel my feelings. And that's why I keep coming here, because I'm a good daughter when I'm doing that. I'm a good wife and I'm a good aunt and I'm a good friend. When I'm not doing that stuff, I can be angry, really angry. My husband will tell you that. I'm angry, resentful, and then I can start acting out and stuff, and it's not pretty. It never ends up pretty, it don't. And that's something that's probably going to be ongoing. Who knows? But, you know, I come here, I've got friends here. I just think this is we're blessed. When I think of my brother and I think of lots of mates, I just think, you know, so lucky. God knows why, but I was so lucky to find this, and having people to show me the way and actually putting the footwork in. Yeah, I do feel blessed and I do feel lucky. And when I leave here, I'm going to go to my mum's and I'm going to be a daughter, and I've got to try it and, you know, look after myself as well, but I'll be there for my mum. And then I'll go back to work and, you know, that boring stuff that I thought I'd never want to do, I'll go back and do that stuff on Monday. It's nice to be able to come here, do a bit of service and be a daughter to my mum. Who would have thought, you know, you were saying, who would have thought my mum, I'd done my mum's head in, and she was, do you know what my mum said to me once, after my brother died? She went, yeah, do you know what I used to do with you? I used to put a mirror underneath your nose, so I still end up in hospital a lot with my lungs, just thinking that you was dead. And I was like, God, do it, what I've done to her. And I don't do that anymore. And it's bloody, that's the price of the stuff of recovery. And do you know what? I can talk. Oh, it's only half an hour. That's not too bad. I can talk for a long time. But I'm not going to. I'm going to wrap it up there. And I'm just going to, thank you for asking me to share. And thank you for your share. And thank you for everyone being of service. Because if we don't do service, the meetings don't happen. And the magic stuff happens here. Thank you.
Thank you.